countries have adopted a hard-fought final agreement at the COP27 climate summit that sets up a fund to help poor countries being battered by natural disasters. The summit delegates agreed to this overarching climate deal yesterday at the closing plenary session, though they did fail to come up with a carbon emission reduction target. The summit delegates agreed to this overarching climate deal yesterday at the closing plenary session, though they did fail to come up with a carbon emission reduction target. Andrew Herlinger asked Associate Professor of Industrial Relations at the University of Queensland, Matt MacDonald, on what the outcomes of the summit were.
So the loss and damage fund was actually something that was originally proposed by Vanuatu back in 1991. So it's been a long time coming. It's been something that developing countries have really pushed for. And what they essentially want is financial assistance for managing the impacts of especially natural disasters, but really the manifestations of climate change. So that's been a big breakthrough that's been agreed upon, but it's really only the fund that's been agreed. We haven't got details now about exactly how it would be administered, who's contributing to the fund, how states access the fund, how much money we're really talking about in this fund. It's a breakthrough, but all the details are still to be worked out.
And are there any details suggesting on which developing countries are going to have access to this as well?
Not as yet, but the assumption would be that essentially it's any country that is, classified as a developing country, but also has experienced negative effects of climate change. Because, of course, these countries, it's a combination of them being among the most exposed to some of the effects of climate change, but least resourced to be able to address them. And, of course, we're talking about countries that are usually least responsible for creating the problem in the first place.
So how does this COP27 agreement compare to other conferences such as the Paris Agreement in 2015?
There was hope that this agreement would specify some details around, or that this meeting would involve specifying some details around implementation at various levels, you know, clarify some rules around how climate financing is going to be managed, to try to minimise how much greenwashing we see, for example, to try to clarify exactly how enforcement might work in the context of states actually living up to their commitments to provide resources to developing countries and to meet their own targets. We haven't actually seen that much of that. And in fact, other than the big breakthrough with loss and damage, there hasn't been much to really celebrate in terms of new action on mitigation or movement away from fossil fuels. Those things have probably been a bit disappointing.
One of the big focuses that seems to be from any action with climate change is to keep that global warming of 1.5 degrees Celsius. Was there at least a better attempt for nations to agree to stay under that or make action to try and do that?
It was a positive outcome that it was retained in this particular agreement because, if not, it says everything about states walking back on their stated commitments under Paris and then again under the Glasgow Agreement of last year. But it's a concern that it was a source of contestation at this COP that states were essentially saying, look, do we just not bother with the 1.5 degree and essentially commit to 2?
Out of this whole conference, what were the bad news or bad points that seem to have come through?
There's always hope in the lead-up to the convention that you see, because of the nature of the Paris Agreement that requires nationally determined contributions to be articulated by states at different points. There was a lot of hope that states would commit in advance to a reduction, a further reduction in emissions. Australia was one of the very few countries who did that. So that wasn't a good sign. And then the failure to really develop robust language around the need to move away from fossil fuels, that wasn't a particularly good outcome. The fact that 1.5 had to be fought for was not a particularly positive outcome. And then it seemed to leave the door open for some creative accounting when it came to things like how climate finance worked that could enable states and even private companies to do a bit of greenwashing.
And there's been some comments, particularly from people like the United Nations Secretary, who say that our planet is now still in the emergency room. Are these quotes accurate?
They really are. They really are. We are at the point where we're already seeing some pretty devastating effects associated with climate change, especially on ecosystems that are vulnerable to even 1 degree rise in temperature, like the Barrier Reef, for example. But we are seeing an increase in severity and frequency of severe weather events, droughts and floods and cyclones. So this and these things are only getting worse, and our time frame for addressing them is narrowing significantly. So I think he's right. Whether that form of language actually helps mobilise an international concern is, of course, a separate issue. But he's certainly right that it really is edging close to a point of no return.
Matt McDonald, Associate Professor of Industrial Relations at the University of Queensland, speaking with Andrew Herlinger.